You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST. You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Inside the Monster with Steve Perrault and Joey Capone.
Welcome to episode 45 of the official Red Sox podcast, Inside the Monster, presented by Odyssey with myself, Steve Perrault, and Joey Capone. Today we have Chief Baseball Officer Chaim Bloom on the program, and boy, this was a great episode. Joey, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Yeah, it was a great interview. I was going to introduce him like he was here, but I think we're already kind of past that bit.
And so here he is. What's up, Chaim? How you doing? No, he's not here. He is going to be in your headphones very soon. Chaim was great. I think after we stopped recording, he said I probably could have even been, you know, more difficult with the question. That's not really who I am, Joey. I'm not really like the super mega grill the guy type of person. I think we ask the right questions that people want to hear, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I couldn't think of anything that like we said, maybe we shouldn't ask him that.
No, I think it was, I think we asked the right stuff and got some, you know, fun stuff in there as well. He had an interesting answer to my Rafi question. I'll say that much. I had a Rafael Devers question in there, and it was a very interesting answer. And that's the tease I got for you, because it's one that you're going to want to hear. But yeah, without further ado, I don't want to tease this too much. You guys are here to listen to Chaim. We had a great interview with him. Gave us a lot of his time, I think 30, 35 minutes. Chill dude. Obviously, he knows he's going through a lot. He knows the team's going through a lot. This is a tough time right now to be a Sox fan, last in the AL East. A lot of questions to answer, and he did a good job of answering them. Coming up after this break, Chief Baseball Officer of the Boston Red Sox, Chaim Bloom.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Alrighty, we are joined by none other than Red Sox Chief Baseball Officer Chaim Bloom First off, Haim, how many other heads of baseball clubs have chief baseball officer as the title? Is it just you? I don't know if other guys have it.
I think right now it's just me.
Okay.
My understanding, I believe there are only two other people that have ever had this title, at least that I know of.
Okay.
Derek Falvey and Tony La Russa.
And what went into that? So you're like, yeah, I'm getting that. It's me now.
I didn't pick it.
Okay.
Yeah, I just took what they gave me. I don't care what people call me, which is probably a good thing right now. just care about getting the job done.
Yeah, that's true. I just say GM anyway. I know that's O'Halloran, but it's just easier to do. But chief baseball officer is still pretty cool. I wanted to start with a question I think you and I have discussed before, but wanted to say it on the podcast. How do you deal with being in a position that's always going to be heavily critiqued, regardless of what you do? It feels like everyone's like, oh, I'll just be Haim. I'll do this. I'll move these guys around. Like, how do you deal with being in that heavily critiqued position?
It's part of what makes a game great. I mean, it means people care. At the end of the day, if nobody is critiquing you, that just means that nobody cares what you're doing. And we look, this sport in general, like a lot of people care about it. In Boston, nobody cares more. You might be able to pick one or two other places, maybe a handful that are on this level. I'm not sure, though. Like, it is so personal here. It just means people care that much. And that means we're going to have backing that nobody else has when we earn it.
Absolutely.
So the general feeling among the fans right now, if I'm to try to be the voice for them, is some general confusion with some of the deadline stuff, mainly the buying and selling. I wanted to ask you, was that the plan all along, or were there some circumstances that dictated what moves were made along the way?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring it up because we should talk about it. So I know, you know, anytime that you are not going, you know, pushing all the chips in or pulling them all out, there's going to be some confusion. Fact of the matter is we were in kind of a weird spot. So it wasn't, you know, I think your plan has to be dictated by where you are on some level, like where you see your team, both the talent level of the team and also the fact of where you are in the standings and where you are in the season. And then on top of that, obviously every trade needs at least one other team to be able to do it. It's fun to make up trades and say you would or wouldn't do them, but they have to actually be there for you. So of course, on some level, you know, especially when you get down to the last 48 hours, that dictates what you do too. But the plan you go into, it really has to be taken into account first and foremost where your team, your organization is, and then where you are in the standing. So where we were, and you know, obviously we're in a little bit of a worse spot now, but where we were going into those last couple days, we were in last in the East. We were a few games out of a playoff spot and behind a few teams. Those are just facts. You know, in that situation, honestly, most teams probably just sell everything in that situation.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether the returns are good or not. You know, sell what you can, get what you can back, save whatever money you can, and just move on. But we also looked at ourselves, the talent level on the team, albeit some of it on the IL right now, but anticipating most of those guys back, and what our odds are. And we said, we're not some crazy long shot, right? We have a real chance. It's a worse chance than we had a month ago. There's no question. You look up a month ago, we had the third best record in the league. We're not there anymore. So it is a worse chance, but it was a real chance. And to me, especially with a talented group and the core that we have, you shouldn't throw away that chance for nothing. It should be meaningful to throw if you're going to do that. And I believe that's especially true here in Boston. I do think that matters, but I think it's kind of true anywhere. Like, you shouldn't throw away that chance if it's a real chance. So we basically said we got to do two things. Where we are in the standings, it's not ideal. We have to listen, especially on our guys that are going to be free agents. We're just being, frankly, irresponsible if we don't. And if we get the right offer for one or more of them, we have to be prepared to do it, or we are going to regret that as an organization. But at the same time, we liked our chances enough that we still wanted to support the team where we could, if we could find ways that make sense to do it and try to come out of it saying, you know what, we didn't walk by an opportunity that really made sense for the organization, but we also came out of it with a team that has at least as good a chance, even if it looks different, at least as good of a chance to get to the postseason and maybe better. Now, I understand that's unsatisfying. The fact of the matter is we're in an unsatisfying position, and to pretend like we weren't in that position either way, I think just wouldn't have been right.
I know you talked about hypothetical trades. I had pitched Franchi for Soto and you just didn't do it. So I think you're not doing your job because you didn't make that deal. But completely separately, when it comes to the trade deadline, how often are you communicating to these guys? Because that just has to be awkward, right? Like it has to, like you mentioned, you're not doing your job if you don't think about, hey, what could we get for JD or what could we get for Evaldi? These guys are obviously done after the year. Their contracts are up. So like, I genuinely think that's correct, that you're not doing your job if you don't do that. But are you communicating with these guys of like, hey, just a heads up, teams are interested. You might be moved. You might be here. That, because that in nature feels awkward.
Yeah, it really is awkward. I mean, that kind of comes to the territory every deadline. This one was difficult for a couple reasons. One, where we were in the standings. Two, the fact of the matter was the team was going on the road 48 hours before the deadline. Just about literally. So one of the most gut-wrenching choices we had had nothing to do with a trade. It had to do with, for me and like maybe a small circle of people here, where are we physically going to do this? And honestly, both choices were unappealing. We have enough people working on this, and especially close to the buzzer, there's enough quick communication that needs to happen within your group that to pick a few of us up, or especially if it was just me, and relocate to Houston didn't seem ideal. That we might miss an opportunity because we couldn't communicate well enough if we did that. But at the same time, that means if we all stayed here, we weren't going to be there to be on the front lines of whatever happened. And of course, at the time you make that decision, you don't know exactly what's going to go down. So that was really, that honestly was probably the most stomach turning part, was knowing, especially as we were closing in on the deal with Houston, I am not going to be there to talk to Vasky about this or to help anybody with the reactions, and that we were going in the moment to pay some price for that. And I knew that, you know, that was on the table, wasn't happy about it, but there really is no free lunch there. So, you know, we decided to do it how we did. And I said, whatever happens, I'm going to be there, you know, the next day after it's done and be with everybody and have a bunch of conversations. So everybody's good. And, you know, I did the same thing last year. We were in first place last year, but I did the same thing last year. I think you plan to do that regardless. In most years, most situations, if you're not going to be with your club, you're not going to be home for the deadline. So having said that, before that, when the team was still at home, had a bunch of conversations. I don't want to get too much into it, but, you know, pretty much, you know what we said publicly about Bogey, about Rafi, you know, said that to them as well. So they were on the same page. And, you know, some of these other guys, without getting into a list, you know, there are certain guys that I think there was enough news and enough rumors swirling around them that it made sense to me to pull them aside and just be as honest with them as I could. And honestly, with that, you know, the situation we're in, like I told you, the honest answer is I don't know what's going to happen, but here's how we're thinking about it. Yeah. Here's what could happen. And then on the day before the team left, you know, Alex and I, we were communicating about this constantly for, you know, a couple of weeks leading up to it, but, you know, made sure to talk to every coach, either individually or in small groups, to prepare them for here is what could happen over the next 48 hours, knowing 2 days out, 2 days is a long time in the world of the trade deadline. You really don't know that much about the specific opportunities that are going to come your way. But in the position we were in, where we knew there was a possibility we might be doing some of what you'd call buying, some of what you'd call selling, that it was important to at least prepare people for that. And the fact of the matter is, especially when it comes to someone like Vasky, who's been in this organization for 14 years, you can prepare people all you want. That's going to hit people hard. There's no way around that. But, you know, we tried, and I, as the person responsible for it, needed to do the heaviest lifting with that, to get in front of it as much as we could.
So shortly after the deadline, you'd said to the media that your door was open to players who wanted to talk about the happenings, the moves in the future, whatever, avoiding the specifics, names, all that stuff. Has anybody taken you up on that offer?
Yeah, one thing that I have found in this is that, you know, and it's actually something that, you know, was a really interesting and good lesson for me, especially from the first few months that I was here. And as you recall, we did some major business during that time. is that, you know, when it's a little bit different when you've been in an organization for a long time. Players have come up knowing you. They've known you on their way through the system. When you're newer here, you might have to seek guys out. You know, and especially it is a weird relationship always, you know, we're management and then they know that we have some power over their careers that honestly is pretty profound, and different guys are in different situations. Some of them are going to be more proactive about it than others. But if you really want to have a conversation with someone, you better seek them out. In some cases, they'll come find you. And I've found as I've been in this organization longer and people have gotten to know me a little bit better, that happens more. It's just less likely to happen early on. And so, you know, I think that's on me, really. I mean, you want to make sure people know you're available and that you're accessible. I think you prove that by being around. But it's on me if, boy, it would really be good for so-and-so to know such and such. I got to go make that happen.
Yeah, and you're out there a lot during BP, you know, walking around and talking with folks. How much do you get away from that? How much you take away from that with the players? And is that more just kind of your normal, you know, kind of shooting the breeze type of thing? Or would that ever be a conversation that, you know, you find very meaningful that happens before the game?
Usually the best conversations don't happen during that time out on the field. They usually happen inside. Once in a while, they might even happen away from the field. But if you're going to have one of those conversations at the field, it usually is going to happen earlier in the day. Before guys get outside and before they start going through those pregame routines.
Yeah, they seem to be in that. I don't even want to talk to them there. Like they're so, you know, routine oriented. I got to do BP now. I do fielding now. So I could understand why that's more just kind of picking the brain and just kind of hanging out. A lot of people talk about your relationship with Alex Cora. I personally think it's something that we probably shouldn't care as much as we actually do. That seems like a personal matter. But in your opinion, what do you think defines a productive relationship between someone in your position and a manager of a baseball team? What would define that for you?
I mean, I think you guys should care about it, because I think if you care about the Red Sox, you should care about this relationship. That's really true with any organization. It is a hugely important relationship. This topic actually came up during 2020 when, as you recall, I did a couple of managerial searches, and to me, a lot gets made of this. I think all the thing, it really just boils down to a partnership. We're each different people with different jobs, and sometimes we're going to have different perspectives, but we both have huge responsibilities to get this organization going where it needs to go. And we work together in that, even recognizing there's different things that we can and should do. And one thing I would say, and this has been true of every manager I've ever worked with, like if you agree on every single thing, you're probably just not talking about enough stuff. Yeah. But you also should be learning from each other. I kind of feel that way about everybody I work with in this game. Like if you think there is somebody that you're working with, we have 200 plus people in this department. If I think there's someone in this department that I can't learn from, I am certainly wrong. And really, I think if everybody in this department takes that attitude about everybody else, watch out, we're going to be really hard to beat, because we as an organization are going to learn really quickly. In this game, like the emotions run high. I mean, it ended up being honestly more public than I would have wanted it. But after we beat the Rays last year, you know, you guys can imagine how emotional that series was for me and how amazing it was to come out on top. And you guys saw it with Alex, and that was an amazing thing, and really kind of the outpouring of a lot of things that had been stored up really throughout the year, and a lot of tough slogs, a lot of you know, some fun high fives after games, and some quiet moments after certain things you know, seem to be going off the rails, and then it culminates. You know, you beat the division winners in a series; you're the last team standing in the AL East, and you know, those moments are really special. And those come from, you know, the authenticity of just riding the wave through the whole year. And the biggest thing for me is, you know, you're riding the wave with the other person.
Yeah.
And it's not always going to be smooth. It is rare. I mean, this organization got to experience as close as you get to that in 2018. And even then, I've talked to people here, like when you're in the middle of it, looking back on it, it feels like, yeah, you steamrolled everybody, it was a sure thing. It didn't feel like that for folks here when they're in the middle of it. It never does. Success in this game never feels easy when you're going through it. And you got to be there for each other.
Yeah, I'm not to say, I hear you, like not to say that we shouldn't care about the relationship you have with AC. I'm more talking on a personal level of, there always seems like there should be like a, hey, you don't need to know this. You don't need to know exactly what's going on behind closed doors. But you're saying it's normal for you guys, obviously, to have disagreements, for you to not see everything exactly the same way. And I fully agree with that. I think that's it's natural you're going to disagree on certain things, but you would consider it a very productive and healthy relationship that you guys have been able to build.
Yeah. And one thing I found funny is that usually the things on the outside that people assume that I might be disagreeing with when they happen during the game, I'm usually not disagreeing with them. Honestly, like, we got a good manager, guys. Like, there isn't really that much in turn like to disagree over. You know, there really isn't. I mean, anybody, you'd say that about me and BOH or anybody in this office, we're going to disagree sometimes. Again, if we don't, we're probably missing some stuff, and that's how we all get better. But, you know, I think it's really like, I view my job as to support him in the ways that I can, obviously, chiefly by giving him a roster that can go win. But there's so many other ways to help him out with different things that might be on his plate. And I can tell you, he is amazing at supporting me with, hey, there's something that's happening here that if your attention could help this. And none of us sees everything. I certainly don't in my chair. And he is outstanding at pointing me in certain directions, like, hey, this guy needs a little bit of your time, or this thing isn't quite clicking. Can you talk to these people and see if we can make this better? And he's very observant about those things. And for me, like, I just, you know, for the most part, if I can put my head on the pillow at night feeling like I made the organization better that day, that's a good day. And he points me to a lot of ways to do that, which I really appreciate.
What was your reaction to the Chris Sale news? And I am curious, based, you know, on top of that, how much value you put in for each season on, like, weird stuff's going to happen. There might be some funky injury that happens. A player might have to leave the team for a certain amount of weeks. How much do you factor that into your roster creation in the offseason?
Some things are hard to predict. I mean, you know, I said it when we're talking to the media, like, you almost don't know what to say in the case of Chris. I mean, this is so bizarre, all the different things that have happened. I've lost count of the number of Chris Sale injury media availabilities that I have done. It just sucks.
A lot.
You guys know this guy. He is an incredible competitor. He is one of the best competitors of, like, this era of baseball. And unfortunately, he hasn't been able to compete nearly enough. Some things you can plan for. You obviously know if you have a known issue with a player, and hey, this guy might have to miss some time for something, then you can plan for it a little more directly. A lot of things you can't, and you just have to build depth, especially on the pitching side. We have had every bit of that tested. You're hoping to have the good fortune to have the injuries be spaced out over the course of the season rather than happen all at the same time. But you can't count on that good fortune. That's part of why you build it. And, you know, I look at last year, and we were super fortunate, and also our medical staff and the players themselves deserve some credit, but we didn't have these types of injuries on the pitching side. And had we, I don't think we were in as good a position with our internal starting pitching depth as we are this year. Now, obviously, it has gotten to be a little much over the last month. But you look at June, which really was our best month. We were carried in June in part by people like Cutter Crawford and Josh Winkowski stepping in and really not missing a beat. And that's not to be taken for granted. I don't think we were in that position last year. A lot of people deserve credit for that. And that really has to be the norm. We have to have ideally homegrown young starting pitchers who can step in, and you really need a roll 7, 8, 9, 10 deep, because all of those guys are going to start games over the course of the season. And we need to have a bunch of them. I think we're well on our way to that, but it just highlights the need for it. And you really can never have enough.
I got to tell you, Haim, I am so shamelessly envious of how articulate you are. My job is to speak into a microphone, and I think you do it 10 times better than I do. I feel like you could talk your way into any job in the world. Like, you could walk into NASA and talk for 10 minutes and become an astronaut. In that vein, if you could do something else, if you weren't working in baseball at all, where do you think you'd find yourself, any job in the world?
I don't know. I mean, I've been incredibly fortunate that I got in this business really early, and I never had to figure out what plan B was. So I've never thought about it. I think sometimes my wife fantasizes about what that might be. But it's not really something that I've had to think about. I'm lucky that I've been able to spend a career doing something that I absolutely love with people that I really care about and respect. Not that many people can say that. I think there's plenty of people in baseball that cannot claim to have been as lucky in the organizations they've worked for as I have. Because this is a tough game. And a lot of people spend a long time in this game and don't get to experience the cultures that I've experienced. So I feel super lucky for that. I know I kind of dodged your question, but I honestly don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I hope not to have to think about it for a long, long time.
Astronaut didn't tickle anything?
No, that seems, yeah. I don't think I could be qualified for that.
Fair enough. Then if you talk yourself into it, it's like, well, this guy's just going to suck. Like, he's going to be terrible right off the bat, and then they'll just know to fire you. So I don't know if that's even worth it. But I guess that is, it's not, you dodge the answer, but it's not a bad answer. So I think it still plays. You can't dodge this question, though. Where's that Red Sox cardigan? Do you still have that from the draft? Because I still want to auction that off for the Jimmy Fund. Okay. All right.
Oh, we got it.
If he has it in hand. Oh my God, he has it on hand.
There it is.
It's my office. It's right here.
Look at that.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
There it is.
So you're obviously pretty connected to that then, if you have it just on hand and ready to go.
Well, I just keep it in the office. I haven't worn it in a while. That may be our problem. Maybe I should start wearing it.
I think you should. Whoa. Well, I mean, they had that clip of you with like the, yeah, like that slow-mo. If you had the cardigan on, I mean, that would have been game over. So
it's really hot in that thing. So sometimes the office is a little over air conditioned. So I wear it in here. And obviously the winter is the winter. I don't know. When was that? It was like for May. Wearing that in the suite in May, I'd have been sweating bullets.
Yeah. That, I mean, so you're there for most of the games, or how often are you in that suite?
Most of the games, not every single one, but most of the time.
Because I'll see you up there. But then another shot earlier this year was from a fan that got you in a hoodie in Detroit, I think. I think you were sitting kind of closer to the field. Hilarious shot, by the way, because it looks like you're like undercover and like trying to dodge it. But
that was the bad weather day in Detroit.
Right.
And I started out behind the plate and it started to rain. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to stick it out down here. And then it eventually became pretty unpleasant. It's like, what am I doing? Like, they gave me a suite. I should go in there.
Why am I?
Yeah,
here?
I think they'd let you inside if you asked. Yeah.
How often, like on the road? Because at home, obviously, you got the suite and everything. But on the road, how often are you sitting in like the fan seats?
It really depends. I mean, honestly, the best view of the game to me is from behind the plate. There's a reason the scouts sit there. It obviously limits, there are other, sometimes it's good to be able to do other things during the game, like communication wise and so forth, or, catch up with colleagues, phone calls, whatever. Can't really do that in the stands. I'm sometimes not down there, but it is, for me, it's the best view of the game.
Completely switching gears here. I am curious of how often you're in touch with agents during the course of a season. I know there was a lot made of the Xander thing preseason and, couldn't come to a deal. But I feel like I've read multiple reports of like, oh, they're not going to talk during the season, but maybe they will talk during the season. Basically, how frequent are you in touch with the agents? And do you feel like that's a comfortable conversation, or is that a little uncomfy?
Most of the in-season conversation with agents usually isn't about things like contract extensions. First of all, a lot of the more prominent agents, they obviously have a lot of players. And so there's a decent chance that we have one or two or multiple other players that they represent, or that maybe they have a client that might be available and they want to see if you're interested. There's any number of things you might catch up with agents on having to do with players that don't have to do with their contracts during the course of a season. Sometimes they're passing through and they want to let you know they're going to be in town. And so you go say hi. There's always a lot of talk about contract extensions, especially at certain times of the year. When you actually look at around the industry, there aren't that many that actually happen.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
But a lot get talked about. And, there's a reason for that. Like, obviously, leaving aside the situations we were in with the left side of our infield, like, these things are there's a lot of different factors in play. And when you're not talking about a player who's a free agent, and so their value is being actively vetted by the market, there's a lot more room to see the world differently because so much of it is speculative. And organizations and players approach that risk differently. So, you know, there's a lot more ways not to overlap with any player. So I'd say around the industry, like, there is a lot of conversation about that, that tends not to lead to a whole lot of deals, but there's a lot of conversation. And then there's even way more conversation with agents about topics that have nothing to do with contracts. But I do think those relationships with agents, the working relationships that we have, are really important, because when you think about it, 95% of the time, our interests are actually perfectly aligned with the agents. We both want these players to be well cared for so they can dominate and produce. And most of the conversation we have with agents is actually really collaborative about how can we make that happen, because that's going to help everybody.
You talk about baseball scouts. I've been scouting Rafael Devers myself all year, and I think he's really good, and I think you should sign him for the rest of his life. What are your thoughts on my assessment?
I mean, I agree with your assessment. All right, good. You know, that's a thumbs up for me.
All right, perfect. That's all.
Good scouting.
There we go.
It's really been hard. I've had to go to the park and like really look closely. I've been looking for his swing and his contact rate and his forp-absorb, and it's not easy. Being a scout is not easy, and I feel like you would know that.
It's not, but I mean, if you really want to develop your skills, don't worry too much about the numbers when you're scouting. Just watch the game
and just take it in.
Take it in. I mean, write stuff down. You know, don't wing it. This is a serious business. But
okay.
You don't have to worry about the forp-absorb. Just make notes on what you're seeing.
Okay. I'm going to start just letting the game come to me instead of writing all the stuff down. Completely separate. I know we're kind of jumping all over the place, but that's what we do. I'm curious what you do for fun, because I feel like you have a job that is just constant high stress and just a lot going on. What do you do when you're not, you know, making deals or talking about potential contracts and all that stuff that could be kind of a pain in the ass, even though it's part of the job?
I used to be such a more well-rounded person. I think before I spent a while in baseball, and also like as is, I don't spend enough time with my family. So when I can, I'm mostly focused on that. And, you know, we have three kids who, depending on the time of year, I generally don't see them enough, and depending on the time of year, it might really not be enough. So I try to be present for them once in a while. You know, it's harder during the season because your nights are full, but you know, my wife and I try to watch certain shows together. It kind of, what keeps you from binging, other than all of the stuff on our plates, is we would only watch when we both can watch. You can't watch any episodes on your own.
Yeah.
So we do that sometimes. But you know, especially moving here during COVID, like I haven't gotten out that much. Mm. And we're trying to change that, you know, that now we're starting to have more of a community with, you know, my wife's from here and we know people here, but, you know, the kids starting to have friends in school and meeting different families. But I would say for the most part, you know, we try, if we're going to allocate, like if we have like real significant time where we can kind of step away from work, because it's really hard to do that completely ever and feel like you're letting your teammates down, frankly, if you do that completely, but try to find time either to spend time as a family, or, you know, maybe just me and my wife.
That is very, you can't watch the show without the significant other. It's like an unwritten rule. And if you do it, then you have to answer to that for a while. So I totally understand that.
I'm going to tell you guys a story. So this is way back, but 2014 was when my oldest was born. And leading up to that time, we had been watching Breaking Bad. And have both of you guys seen it?
Yeah, it's incredible. Oh, yeah. One of the best.
It's an amazing show, but it does, like, I'm not, no spoilers if anybody hasn't seen it, but like it does get pretty dark as you go deeper and deeper into it, I think. And actually like really appalling at times, right? So we're watching this and we're making our way through the show, and you know, we had an eventful end to the pregnancy, and so we couldn't get to the end of it before the baby was born. And I was so happy. I mean, becoming a parent's like the greatest thing, like definitely the greatest part of my life. But we had like three episodes left. And I think my wife at that point, it was just, she wasn't really as into the show as I was, but we were watching it together. And I'm thinking, you know, we have this newborn and like, there's all that stuff for the newer, but I'm thinking, when are we going to finish the show? Like, it's tough to figure out when it's appropriate to bring that up. Without being respectful to, you know.
Yeah.
So I eventually got permission to finish it on my own, which I did.
Ooh, okay.
Wow.
That's a big
deal. Did she ever finish the final three episodes?
I think she might eventually watch them, but I actually commend her. Like, she was kind of able to just let go, and like I had to know what was going to happen.
Well, that's you guys were watching live, right? Like, that was like weekly.
No,
okay.
No, it was over by then. We were out there. We were streaming it.
I couldn't imagine live if that was like all my friends knew, and I'm like, this baby, how did we plan this? This was terrible.
what are so we that's doing? More than you asked, but that popped into my head.
No, that's fair. You know, baseball question for you, especially with this team, regardless of how the rest of the season goes, do you envision the bullpen being a huge area that you guys want to address in the offseason?
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, that is the thing that really can make or break your season. Obviously, we have had ups and downs out there, to say the least. I think what most, you know, I sort of break it down. I don't want to walk past that we have had some really bright spots out there. And those are obvious. And, you know, to me, you know, a lot gets made in the offseason, you know, of some of the more famous names that go off the board. When you really look at the good bullpens around the league, like, we need to scale up the organizational success that John Schreiber has been.
Yeah,
we need to, you know, the organizations that really nail their bullpens are doing that a lot. And I'm proud of all of our people, especially John, because he put in a ton of work. I mean, he works his tail off, and that is part of why his stuff has jumped, and it's part of why he's as dependable as he is. But we need to find those guys, and there are things we can do as an organization that we have been doing that we're going to continue to do to scale that up. And, you know, when I break down, you know, what's going on in the pen, you know, I look at it from a couple angles. From the front office side, we look at talent identification in terms of the guys we bring in the organization. Were we on the right guys? Now, especially when it comes to trades or even free agents, you're not going to be able to get everybody you are on. But you can still feel good about, okay, we identified that guy for various reasons, opportunity, whatever it was. We might not have ended up with him, but were we on the right guys? And then how do we get the most out of the talent that they have? There are guys, including, and you see it, you know, we've seen some here, and we want to be the organization where those guys can thrive here rather than see a guy with natural talent, not live up to the talent in terms of the results, and then lose faith in him and then see him go live up to it somewhere else. That kills me when that happens. And every year, you know, hopefully there's not too many of these guys, but we've had some of these guys that, you know, we know it's in there, and you see it, and you see it for stretches, you see flashes of it, you see the ingredients. And where we need to challenge ourselves as an organization is how to get really, really good at bringing that talent out. And those are the successes that I think we need and that we can be the most proud of. I mean, you know, it's not a bullpen guy, but, you know, we were able to be that for Nick when we got him from Philly. And, you know, there's obviously he's still growing and he's still learning. But he was able to come here, and this is not the easiest place to come to, you know, when you have struggled and find success, but our staff was able to get the best Nick Pivetta that we saw in the postseason. And that's why we had the ride we had, in October. And so we need to constantly be looking in the mirror at what are the good things we're doing to get that out of guys, and how do we do that more and more often. We have all the ingredients here to do it. I think we have had a lot of successes in the last couple of years, but there's some guys where we haven't gotten them there yet, and we need to get them there.
Anytime I hear Pivetta's name, especially with last year, I just think of him running off the mound like a madman. That was crazy. Only a couple more for you. I'm curious from your perspective on this one with Christian Vasquez, of do you think trading a guy away diminishes the likelihood that they'll return to you when they hit free agency? Or do you think that's just, at this point, players understand it's a business, it's not personal, you get something in return for 2 months, and that still doesn't mean you can't have a conversation about a deal the next year? I just personally, I can't think of a ton of examples of the trade away, get the guy back. You would know way more than me, but I know Chapman comes to mind, but I feel like it's not that common. Do you think it's because the act of trading them away and like kind of a goodbye is why that doesn't happen as much as you would think?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And leaving aside that particular situation, because as you guys know, the rules prohibit me from talking about players on other teams.
Yes.
But generally speaking, that tends to be true. I do think in certain cases, and you sometimes hear guys talk about it in certain cases, that, hey, you know, once I left, it was easier to imagine being somewhere else. And then it was easier to continue to consider teams that I wasn't going to consider. So I think that can happen. Is it the case all the time? No. And, you know, when you get to free agency, obviously a lot of different things can happen. Strange things can happen. Teams can pop up out of the woodwork that nobody was anticipating and charge in and give a player something to consider that he didn't think he was going to be considering. So those things can happen, and they may or may not happen as a result of a trade. It's obviously something that you need to think about, you know, if you still like the player and want the player. And you weigh that, I think, when considering these deals.
Joey's got a very important question for you.
Yeah, it's not a question at all. It's just a little story. I don't even have a segue for it. It's the story that I wanted to tell you at the beginning of this.
Yeah.
So this is, I don't know,
a couple months
early
ago.
Early June, maybe. I'm on my way down to Fenway Park, and I get a text from Steve that says, we need a light because we shoot our podcast in the WEEI studio post game. We wait till everybody clears out and we shoot in there. And we do video as well. So we needed a light because at that point, you know,
it's dark.
The field lights are all off. It's dark. It's usually nighttime. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the sun goes away. So I stop along the way and like a Best Buy. And the only ring light that I can find is like branded right across the front, vlogging kit. And there's like 13-year-old girls on the boxes doing like TikTok dances. And like it's just obviously like a child's toy that I'm buying. And I'm like, God, it's not a big deal. I'll shove it in my backpack and whatever. And I get to Fenway and it doesn't fit in my bag. I have like a full camera bag and whatever with my laptop and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm just going to make a run for it. I'm like on Jersey Street. I'm like, the media entrance is right there. I'll get in there, get in the elevator, get up, whatever. I'm very hyper conscious of this vlogging kit that I got going on, and make my way through the entrance. Elevator is open and waiting for me. I'm like, here we go. Perfect. No one's going to see me. And I get in the elevator, and the only other person in the elevator is Chaim Bloom. And it was you and the elevator operator. And I like head down, hid this thing. And luckily for me, we went up one floor, and like a family got on with a kid. And they were like, hey, you see who this is? And you had a whole like, hi, how you doing with the kid? First of all, wild that you are out and about in the public during open hours at the park. I don't know why. I just assumed that there's like a
secret man of the people
time elevator. Yeah. One, crazy. Two, any recollection of that? did that hold any weight to you, or has it been just keeping me awake for no reason?
Yeah, I think it's keeping you awake for no reason. I don't. I wish I remembered. My head must have been somewhere else. I don't know. I hope you don't take offense at that.
No, I gotta say, Joey came up to me and he looked like he just got the worst news of all time. I was immediately like, I bet he didn't even notice. Like, he's like, oh, it had these vloggers on the side. I'm like, I'm sure it's fine. You have
just
a million
silly
things
it was
on
a
your
silly
mind.
Silly thing to get caught with, you know what I mean? Just a silly thing.
Yes,
I don't know.
I guess, but yeah, you're. Oh, I mean, you walk around the concourse is a decent amount, right? I know it's basically just elevator right up to the suite.
Yeah, I will sometimes. I mean, even to get from our offices to the suite. There are some public areas you do go through. Sometimes there'll be people in the stands, friends, relatives that I'll go pop down and visit. It can be eventful when you walk down there. You never know who you're going to encounter. But, you know, for the most part, people are great. And look, the way I kind of view it, like, this is about the players and our staff. Like, those are the guys that should be catered to and taken care of. Like I told you guys, we were talking about AC earlier, like, my job is to help him succeed. That's right. And that applies to our players also. Like, that is at the core, like, you know, how I view my responsibility to the organization and to AC and to our players is to put them in positions to succeed. They're really, really talented. They're under a lot of pressure. We need to take care of them and put them in positions to succeed. So, you know, okay, am I going to, once in a while, is it nice to have a suite? Yes. Is it nice to have an easier time parking at Fenway than most of our fans who come? Yeah, for sure. But for the most part, I can get where I need to get. I don't really need too many people worrying about me. What we need to worry about our players. And to take care of them and put them in position to succeed. And that is one thing that really has stood out to me since joining this organization. I think for the most part, organizations are pretty good at taking care of players, especially relative to like what it was when I got in the business. But the Red Sox take this to another level, and it shows in how players feel about the organization. It shows how people work here feel about the organization. We know it's a business, and look, we saw it last week. Like, there are sometimes you have to put those blinders on and do the right thing for the organization and kind of push through your feelings to do it. But that stuff really, really matters. And it's amazing to see it in action. And so for me, that's where our focus needs to be. Like for me and our front office, we're here to help. Obviously, we need to make the right decisions. We need to do a good job. Sometimes that means pushing people. Sometimes, you know, that means, you know, demanding and certain things. But for the most part, those players are the game, and we need to put them in position to succeed.
Absolutely. Last question for you. This is an easy one. I'm just curious your thoughts on the red seat, because everyone has an opinion on it, and I don't want to get into mine. It's too long. I just think it's bizarro world, the whole story and everything. And Manny's was 1 foot shorter, conveniently, and through the steroid era, no one hit it. Anyway, what are your thoughts on the red seat?
That's a tough one. This might be the toughest question you guys.
This is the toughest question.
Because I will say this. I mean, you guys have seen more game action and more BP at Fenway Park than I have.
Yeah.
But I have seen some monstrous human beings with massive power not come anywhere close to that thing.
Yeah.
And yet, I am a believer in the legends of the game.
Okay. Red Sea believer here.
I actually talked to someone who insists that he was here on that day and saw the whole thing happen, and that it is every bit of the truth. And I'm taking sort of like an X-Files position on this, is that I want to believe. So I'm going to choose to believe.
Okay.
I think, like, this is baseball, man. If we're not going to believe that stuff, what are we doing?
It's very true. Well, you also have it, you're doing a little more than believing, because you have a story that says, hey, I was there. It happened. Like, you have an eyewitness.
Yes. And that's what I told him. I said, I believe you. I'm choosing to believe, because you have to have faith in baseball.
Okay. Chaim Bloom, red seat believer. Thank you so much for doing this, man. You gave us a lot of your time, and yeah, excited for, you know, the next time we get to do this. Hopefully it's every season. And yeah, Joey and I are just living and dying on every game. So hopefully, you know, a little win streak can get going here, and we can jump four teams in the standings. That's what we're pulling for you.
We are too. And it's good to talk to you guys. And this has been a rough patch. No doubt about it. I do think we got a hot streak in us. But even like at these times, even when things are loud, this is actually when you, at least I, like, you know, not having been here that long, appreciate the passion the most, because, you know, I know everybody just wants us to be good. We are losing sleep and spending days and nights trying to figure out every little advantage we can to get us on the right track and deliver what everybody out there deserves. So thanks for hanging with us.
I'm Bloom. Appreciate you, man.
You bet.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All righty. That was our Chaim Bloom interview. Joey, your top takeaway. What was your favorite answer that he gave us?
I think near the beginning, honestly, when he's talking about the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And just how open he was about it, and that he made it make sense in some ways. I also love when he steps away from baseball for a sec. You can see his brain go like, I'm going to lean back in the recliner for just half a second here. But he's always ready to snap back up. You know what I mean? I like when he shows who he is, Chaim the person.
Exactly. I'm impressed. Chaim does this thing where I think he'll answer the question while it's being asked in his head, So it's like, oh, okay, I got this one figured out. All right, here we go. Here's the answer that I literally just crafted up in like the 7 seconds that you were talking. He's good at doing this. He's good at answering the questions of the media, questions of us. I guess we're media. We're kind of in between. But, yeah, I think Haim means well. I believe in Haim Bloom. A lot of people right now don't. A lot of people question, oh, the sell, the buy, what are you doing? He knows it. We know it. He's going to be judged mainly on Xander and Devers. It's going to come down to, is Bogaerts staying here? Is Devers getting that mega contract? I think he basically just confirmed that on this episode, so we can stop talking about paid Devers. But yeah,
that's done.
There's a lot of questions that are going to need to be answered in the offseason. He gets it with the bullpen. He gets it with the rotation. The Chris Sale stuff, I mean, we'll talk about that in our little stupid two-game series recap. Not the recap, the series is stupid.
Our stupid little recap.
We'll put in our stupid-ass recap that we put.
Listen to our silly little stupid-ass episode. Listen to our dumb asses sit here and talk about these stupid games.
The stupid Inside the Monster. No, I just hate these two gamers. I've said it a million times, but shout out to Haim Bloom. Thank you for doing that, Haim. Like, he's listening right now. That was good interview, and he can feel the pressure. You can tell that he can feel the pressure. He understands the critics. I think he has a good feel for what people are going to react to, how they're going to react to certain moves. Really, you know, talking about the Vasquez one at the deadline, but a lot is TBD right now. For Haim Bloom's moves coming up this offseason, I think his time in Boston is going to be big time judged on what happens this offseason. And I am extremely excited to see what that is. Joey, any closing thoughts here?
I'm glad you didn't remember the elevator thing.
I knew we wouldn't.
I know it sounds stupid is the thing. Like, I get it. You know, I get that. It's like, why are you so hung up on that?
Yeah, why?
It's like I was walking around with like a children's toy. I don't know.
I think that we've like, all been in those situations.
Supposed to look like official media. We're the official podcast of the Boston Red Sox. I've been there for like a month, and I show up with a toy ring light that says vlogging kit across it. You're like, wow, this is the guy, huh? Cool. Nice job. I don't know, man.
No, your logic is not wrong. I know my mom will say this to me all the time. Like, no one's looking at you, Steven. Like, no one's, you think it's whatever. This looks weird. That looks weird. No one's looking at you. So I think from that perspective, no one really noticed. I don't think anyone noticed, Joe.
Steve, no one cares about you, okay?
No one cares. What my mom always said, Steven, no one cares about you, all right? So just stop. Stop thinking that anyone gives a damn.
Yeah, you're saying at the dinner table, like, man, I didn't feel like today you guys were all too nice to me. Steven, nobody cares about you.
No one cares about you. So just
don't. Nobody cares about you.
Nobody cares. Just shut up. That's how all the dinners go. No, just kidding. But yeah, shout out Haim Bloom.
Good stuff.
Episode 45 was the Pedro Martinez episode that we had Haim Bloom.
Oh.
Yeah. Hopefully we get Petey on here soon. That would be nice.
That'd be cool, man. It'd be cool.
This offseason, probably. I think it'd be a good time to have a nice fireside chat with Petey. Be a good time to do that. But yeah, next you'll hear from Joey and I.
Special?
Petey, what'd you say? Oh, a double?
A Petey and Petey special?
That would do numbies. Yeah, wow. Big time. Next time you'll hear from one Joey Capone and myself is after this two-game series with the Braves. Recap. A lot of stuff we have to talk about, Joe. You got the Eck news, the Sale news, the Honey Mustard still stinks at Fenway. There's a lot of stuff that we're going to talk about on this episode, so be on the lookout for that. But appreciate you guys tuning in. Got more player interviews coming up, more Red Sox people, Red Sox humans. I was going to say personnel, but it's more people that you would see at the ballpark interviews coming up. A lot of cool stuff around the corner. Sox got to figure it out. 5 games back as we record this. They got to figure it out. I still have some level of hope, which is probably stupid, but big episode coming up, Joey, recapping this Braves series. Until then, for Joey Capone, I am Steve Peralt. Go Sox, kid. Inside the Monster is a production of Odyssey in partnership with the Boston Red Sox. The show is produced by me, Steve Peralt. Our executive producer is Lena Glazer, mixing and video editing by Joey Capone. Special thanks to the Red Sox and Major League Baseball for their contributions to the production of this podcast.